Moncrief on News Talk.
Jonathan De Burka Butler joins us once again to bring us stories from other parts of the world. Afternoon, John.
Sean, how are you getting on?
UK, we're going to go to first, where a couple of Stop Oil protesters have been jailed.
Yes, you might remember this particular incident took place in October 2022. I think it was the 14th of October 2022 specifically, when two young women by the name of Phoebe Plummer and Anna Holland went into the National Gallery of London there, National Gallery of Art in London, and they threw soup on one of Vincent van Gogh's sunflowers. Mm. I think there's several versions of sunflowers, but this is a prized possession of the National Gallery of Art in London, as you can imagine. So people were extremely unhappy when this particular incident happened. And, you know, people have mixed reactions about these protests that, you know, Just Stop Oil do. And in this particular instance, the judge was not particularly impressed by what Phoebe Plummer and Anna Holland had done. Now, they're two relatively young women. They're in their early 20s. And it wasn't their first time in trouble. And they were convicted earlier this year. And at that particular trial, the judge told Plummer and Holland at the time to be prepared in practical and emotional terms to go to prison. And when they came back at the end of last month, she handed them 2 years and 3 months in prison and 20 months in prison. So it's fairly significant.
That's a fairly hefty,
fairly hefty for throwing a bit of soup on a masterpiece, it has to be said. And they didn't do much damage to the, they didn't do any damage to the piece itself, although the frame was damaged slightly. But I suppose that the painting was in a way lucky to get away without being damaged.
Yeah, okay. And it, I suppose criminal damage is that kind of thing they were found guilty
of. That's what it was.
Yes, indeed. And the reasons for protesting, for making this protest, didn't seem to cut much ice in court then.
No, it didn't. Yeah. She didn't sympathise with what they were trying to do, which are you know, no doubt good reasons for protesting, but as I said, not everybody agrees with the manner in which it's done.
Yeah, and was the court filled with people who own museums and artists cheering and saying, no, go on, give them the gallows instead?
Or? No, I don't think there was. I mean, there was a mixed reaction from the art world. There was an open letter which got a bit of coverage from 100 various different people involved in the art world, including someone from NCAD, I believe. And it was signed, basically asking them not to send these two women to jail. But obviously it fell on deaf ears in this case.
Right, okay. And Korea we're going to go to now. And
this doesn't happen often.
This doesn't happen often. So is this someone who defected from North Korea and then decided they want to get back in?
Yes, that's exactly what happened.
Okay, And how did they try to get back in?
Right, so this is a man in his 30s. We don't know everything about him. We just know that he came from North Korea about 10 years ago, tried to settle in South Korea. Now, he didn't go very far from the border. He was living and working in a place in a northern city called Paju. Paju has a population of about 500,000 people in it, lots of military bases with Koreans, South Koreans and Americans in it. Mm. And you get a view, you can actually get a view of North Korea from over the river, effectively, right? So he didn't go too far away from home. And it appears that what he told authorities later on was that he was getting in a little bit of trouble with various different fines. Again, we don't know what kind of fines they were. And he decided, right, the authorities in South Korea are on to me here. Time to scarper back home. So he stole a bus in this town. Okay. He stole it at 1 a.m. CCTV footage later showed that he stole it at around 1 a.m. and he tried to drive across the ironically named, I think, Unification Bridge.
Oh, yes.
and he was stopped there, or at least a barrier stopped him. So the guards who look after that on the South Korean side tried to persuade him to stop. He kept going, ended up crashing into a barrier, and he was arrested straight away, as you can imagine.
Okay. And are there any indications why he wanted to go back to North Korea?
Yeah, it's this whole thing that I mentioned about the fines. This was one of the reasons that he mentioned that he wanted to go back. That he had, you know, he had built up these things, and I think he thought he was in trouble. But it's funny. There's about 1,000 North Koreans who come over the border every year, right?
Really? Yeah.
But when they get to Korea, although they get citizenship and they get a bit of a help, they often find it very difficult, as you can imagine, to integrate, like, as they're seen as second-class citizens. There was a survey that was done, I can't remember by what agency, but a survey was done a couple of years ago which showed that on average they earn a lot less than most South Koreans. So
well, they probably wouldn't be qualified.
Exactly. Kind of, yeah. So yeah. So they find it very difficult to get a foothold in society. Now, to be fair, that doesn't mean that they're going back in their droves. Between 2012 and 2022, only 31 former North Korean defectors went back to North Korea. And because you don't always get a warm welcome when you go back either.
One would have thought not, no. And going back there and saying, well, I'm only back because I have criminal fines to pay on the other side. You wouldn't get a big hug.
Not exactly.
So maybe it's just as well. So this poor chap, was he like, and has he been charged with you know, stealing a bus and stuff? That's
well, I think the stealing the bus side of it might be the least of his personality because, as I said, once you're get back into South Korea, you're granted citizenship right straight away. So that means you fall under the law in South Korea and you can get 10 years for trying to hop over the border without permission. So he could be in trouble. But I'm hoping that, you know, the South Korean authorities might use the opportunity to sort of say, well, you know, let's put our arm around him here and welcome him to society. If they were clever, they would. That's the way I'd be playing it if I was in the press room there.
A crackdown in Nigeria, against who and why?
Yeah, so sports betting shops, specifically in the north of the country, right? So Nigeria, as you know, is a very big country. It's split between the north and the south. The south tends to be Christian, the north tends to be Muslim, okay? And back in 2000, 12 Nigerian states voted for Sharia law, right? So they have it. There are various different states in various different ways have Sharia law in the country, right? And obviously, part of Sharia law, they don't like gambling, prostitution, drinking, all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, on the back of complaints from various various community leaders and parents, this Islamic police, as they have in Nigeria, same as they have in Iran, they're called the Hizbah, okay, have initiated a crackdown on betting shops in the state of Kano. Now, Kano is slap bang in the middle of the north of the country. Does that make sense?
Yes. Right? Yeah.
And it would be one of nine states where Sharia law is imposed in a more conservative fashion. Right. There's three other states over in the northeast where it's less strict. That's what they've done. On Tuesday last, they had a sting operation or a day of raids where they closed down 30 shops in one particular neighborhood. So the fact that this was just in one suburb shows
how many betting shops
and how popular it is in this particular city.
Yeah.
And according to some sources, there's been a notable increase in gambling in Nigeria. It's going through an economic crisis at the minute, so a lot of get-rich-quick schemes going on, and this is one of them.
And in this kind of scenario, do they announce in advance we've banned betting shops and then carry out a raid, or the raid just comes out of the blue?
So the raid was the warning.
Right.
It's a good question. The raid was the warning. So what they did was they said to the owners, right, this is illegal what you're doing here. You need to shut down and don't come back again. And then the authorities announced it in the media, said, look, this is what we've done. So now you know you can't be doing this. And anybody who does it from now on, we'll drag them to the Sharia court.
Okay.
We're not going to say what the punishment is, but more than likely it'll be fines or whatever else comes after that.
Right. Okay. And they're legally entitled to do that under the kind of local laws?
Under the Sharia law? Yeah, 100, yeah. Absolutely. 100%. Now, however, having said that, if you are a Christian and you're living in a Christian neighbourhood, you're perfectly entitled to run betting shop. That's no problem.
Ah, right. Okay. Right.
But if you have Muslims coming into your betting shop and you're a Christian, then they can probably, well, no, they, not probably, then they will fine you or you'll get in trouble.
Yeah, crikey.
Complicated.
Right. Holland, we're going to go to next. And the first time someone's been prosecuted under their new sexual harassment law.
Yeah, so this was a sexual harassment law that was brought in July. And I think what's interesting about this particular case is that this 33-year-old man, so a 33-year-old man has been fined 100 euros, okay, and he's been told that if he does it again, he's going to get a 180 euro fine on top of what he's had to pay already. It happened in Rotterdam, and I think what's interesting about it is the fact that it was a special unit of undercover police that was used to actually catch him, right? So when the law originally was published or came out in July of this year, there was a bit of criticism around it, around, you know, well, how are we going to police this? You know,
yes,
how are you going to
yeah.
prove that this was sexual harassment or not? So in three cities, Rotterdam, Utrecht and Arnhem, they launched this pilot scheme where they had these undercover cops going around looking for people who were, you know, guilty of sexual harassment.
Okay.
And they caught this guy, he was brought to court, and he's been fined. So there's been quite a bit of coverage about it. There's actually been quite a bit of coverage about it in international media outside of the Netherlands. So you can imagine it caused a bit of a stir in the Netherlands as well. And this is the first conviction under this particular law. So,
And how much did they get fined?
They got, this guy got fined only 100 euro, which doesn't seem like much of a deterrent.
Not a massive fine. Though I suppose, does it depend on the nature of the sexual harassment, how steep the fine is? Or,
I don't think so, yeah. To tell you the truth. I don't know for sure, but I don't think so.
Yeah, okay. Finally, curiously enough, a story about Gaza, but one that perhaps, given all the horrors that have been going on, has been slightly overlooked. This is about a Yazidi woman who's been in Gaza for over a decade.
Yes, she. Well, we don't know if she's been in Gaza for over a decade, but she's been missing for over a decade. So it was, I think it must have been one of the first stories that we covered when we started doing this slot.
Well, maybe explain who the Yazidis are.
Yeah. So the whole thing about the Yazidis in the modern sense anyway, or the most recent news about them, I suppose, goes back to 2014 when Islamic State were rampant, really, in northern Syria, in most of Syria, northern Syria and northern Iraq. And Islamic State decided that this ethnic group, the Yazidis, were heretics, okay, because they don't believe in the same God that they do, right?
Yeah.
And they chased them into the mountains, effectively, right? So they invaded, when they invaded northern Iraq, the army there that was looking after it capitulated, effectively, and left the Yazidis on their own. And they were chased into the mountains. It was very well covered at the time.
Mm.
It's absolutely shocking. And they killed thousands of them, all right, Islamic State. And they also kidnapped a lot of women and children. About 6,000 women and children went missing. And there's still about 2,500 missing to this day. A lot have been freed. And there are some good stories there. But this is an extraordinary story because this girl, Fawzia Sido, she was 11 years of age when she was captured during that particular time, right? And she'd gone missing. Nobody knew where she was. And about 4 or 5 months ago, she managed somehow to get in touch with Iraqi authorities. We don't know what back channels were used or what was going on exactly, but she somehow managed to get in touch with them. She was in Gaza. We don't know how long she had been living there for, but apparently her captor had died, presumably in an airstrike, okay, launched by the Israelis.
Yeah.
As I said, she managed to get in touch with the Iraqis. The Iraqis got in touch with the Americans, who got in touch with the Israelis, and the Israelis, it seems, managed to help her to get out. And she has now, last week, been reunited with her family all the way back up in northern Iraq. I think it's an extraordinary story.
It is extraordinary. Also, how did she even end up in Gaza in the first place? How do you try? Because the most direct route would be to Israel. So obviously she wouldn't have gone that way.
Yeah, I don't think so. But this is the bit that's missing, right? Because, you know, you're talking about thousands of women and children being trafficked from, you know, northern Iraq into Turkey, Syria and various different places. So there's a lot of information missing as to how she got there in the first place.
Yeah, that is extraordinary. Right, what should we look out for over the next week?
Yeah, a few things coming up, obviously. UK Labour will celebrate, maybe. I don't know if they're going to celebrate.
I don't know.
If they are, they picked a bad week to do it anyway. 100 days in office on Saturday. That's happening this Saturday. The winner of this year's Nobel Peace Prize will be announced on Friday. I think the prize for literature comes out tomorrow, is it? Or maybe the day before, Thursday, I think. Anyway, it's this week.
If you say so.
This week is Nobel Week.
Yeah.
And on the same day, Friday the 11th, is International Coming Out Day. So many celebrations for that.
Okay, and you have a piece about that.
I have a piece in the Examiner today, an interview with Colm O'Gorman and Kian Griffin. So you can have a look at that, actually. Put a link up on the Instagram account at the Burka Butler.
Okay, look there you go. Jonathan, sure. Thanks a million, as ever.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.